Thank you. You'd be glad to know I got one of the Radio 4 questions wrong. Although I did get the square mileage of Sheffield rice, process of deduction. In a school today, and the word Colosseum came up, and I couldn't spell it. He's a K? No, that's wrong. Anyway, these things are sent to try us out. Who's been to a poetry reading before? Ever? A few people. Okay, we've locked the doors. I went to a poetry reading the other week, and it was dreadful. It was just absolutely awful. It was one of those evenings when you're thinking, please, can it stop? So what I'm going to say is there are 8 poems, so you can tick them off. And I'd like to start with going back to my early years. This is a bit of a history lesson. Really. I've been a poet now for about 50 years. I'm used to it. It's my way of talking to the world. It's my vocation. It's my profession. It's what I've been doing for a long, long time. So I'm quite comfortable with it. With some people, it may be the word poetry does a ching in your long back memory that thinks, oh no, I hated poetry. I really did hate poetry because I wasn't very good at it and I didn't understand it. Poetry, when it's operating at its best, is really just accessible speech. That's all it is. So I'm going to take you back to the past and I'm going to start with a poem. We're going back to Anfield, my home district in Liverpool, round about the late 50s. So, cue swirly harp music. And this poem is dedicated to a shop that used to be on every high street in Britain. The poem's called Bring Back Radio Rentals. 1, 2, 3. I've had enough of Twitter and lentils. Bring back radio rentals. Paying for your telly week by week. A black and white fantasia in reproductive teak. A cathode cornucopia of drama and mystique. Variety, ballet and opera. Newsreaders who speak properer. A public service genie of knowledge and delight. From Pinky and Perky to the sky at night. Educationally immensely providential. With a telly from radio rentals, the memory becomes transcendental. Recalling radio rentals. Going with me mother on a trundling tram. The purpose of the trip to hire a radiogram. In the years after Suez and before Vietnam, it proved to be an audio bonanza. Listening to Mario Lanza. A record deck of luxury and halcyon finesse, which soon put pay to snakes and ladders, drafts and boring chests. As exotic as a waltz or cha-cha, a hi-fi abracadabra. Rushing home from school for toast and strawberry jam. Delicious Doris Day on the radiogram. Lots of yabba-dabba-doo and a huge Shazam. We're up to date with radio rentals. Next, a tea's made from radio rentals. We never had it so good with radio rentals. End the poem, clap now. Thank you very much. You're very perceptive. See, it's going well. 7 to go. Moving forward a few years, I went to a school in Liverpool called Liverpool Collegiate Grammar. And it was opened back in 1843 by W.E. Gladstone before he became Prime Minister. And I remember John Humphreys of Radio 4 saying that when you walk into the old BBC building, the building imposes its history and stature on your shoulders. Likewise for Liverpool Collegiate. It still had, when I was there, it obviously still had corporal punishment and the prefects could beat you. And it was basically an institution that ran on fear and educational improvement. So this is a poem called School Rules. Looking at the well-seasoned state of some of you, I sympathise. This may well ring a bell in your memory. The smell of Bunsen burners, the screeching of the chalk, the closed tomb of detention, the banishment of talk, the iron jurisdiction, the warders who still loom, the sentence of a beating in the prefect's common room, such bleak capitulation to end of term exams, abysmal contemplation of parallelograms. And history made me squeamish. At games, I lost my nerve. German, a non-starter, I'd seen in which we serve. I had high hopes for swimming, but never caught that chill. And physics contradictions proved on Thursdays, time stood still. And French, I found so foreign, and geography so flat, but staring out the window, I was very good at that. Then books by Thomas Hardy and the verse of Edwin Muir, the sanctuary of English, the calling and the cure, the Latin speech of Carthage, a mow, a mass, a mat. More staring out the window, I was very good at that. And chemistry was noxious, it made my interest dip. So staring out the window was my apprenticeship. And with Shakespeare, Keats and Shelley, how all of us let rip. We all stared out the window, then gave the prefect's lip. So what calls up a poem or neat iambic quip? It's staring out the window, a sure established tip. Staring out the window, this long apprenticeship. Thank you. You're very, very kind. Now, my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, she was a Victorian. She was born in 1875. The relationship between me and her was somewhat fractious. Some of you of a certain age will recognise what I'm saying when I say she was a member of the Orange Lodge. In fact, she left the Orange Lodge because she found them just not militant enough. And because back then, the Liverpool was a very sectarian place, and I decided to opt out of that. Because basically, if you have something that is based on that which you hate, then that is death. That is the end of thinking, in my humble opinion. However, I learned things about my grandmother as I went on. So this poem is called In the Parlour. I only knew her old, and her house with its parlour polished raw, because God can see in the dark. Dense furniture to weigh weary the spirit, and disapproving curtains, even anything that had colour hadn't. So rainbows never called, or circuses, and parrots were just daft. It was a room in which to be tethered and bleak. The best china was never used because that would be frivolous and wasteful, and something could get chipped. Outside in the hall, the ramrod grandfather clock was a ticking century, measuring time's slow march steps. I only knew her old when she darned the days with hate. She hated Clemens Attlee because he was a posh socialist. She hated Catholics because she observed most of them were short. She hated all forms of alcohol, which she described as horse's piss. But how did she know?
if she'd never tasted either liquid, and if she had, it may have been just a bad pint, or a stallion with a kidney infection. She hated tobacco, so a woman with a cigarette was damned, but a man wasn't. He was just filthy. She hated gambling, but she did the football pools, which wasn't gambling. She also hated Haile Selassie, Wilfred Pickles, and the first moon landing. But she did like dogs. She had several, all of them madder than Crippin. All this hate meant that by the age of 16, I was reading impenetrable left-wing books and drinking and smoking and sneaking into mass and getting a mate to place bets on the Grand National. I also developed this huge affection for Yorkshire broadcasters, the Sea of Tranquility, and Ethiopian emperors. And I became frightened of dogs. She had the same birthday as Hitler. And there were days when I used to think, poor Hitler. I only knew her old, when life for her was about the dwindling of days and cataracts and heavy coats in summer and the Pope being ecumenical on television and an even worse abomination for her, a Labour government. I only knew her old. I did not see her hurled across the classroom by a teacher, causing one of her little fingers to snap, it ever after resembling the shape of a wishbone pointing back into her palm, a penance of deformity, although she would never use the word penance, as that was papist. I didn't see her after that incident, when her father then took his belt to her because he said she must have deserved it. I wasn't there when she lost two babies in childbirth and a couple of husbands and then another child. I was there, though, when her son suddenly became a ghost and her siren grief made next door draw their curtains shut. Maybe that was the day when love was finally looted from her. I only knew her old and at the end. In her room, in her breathless bed, when she left for somewhere where I hoped she wouldn't be old or beaten or stooped with hate. Thank you. I'm going to read a couple of children's poems now. I was in Lound today and also Windmill Hill and had a really wonderful time. Children's poems are basically poems for adults, for the child that we've lost, really. Those of you who are parents and grandparents will have noticed the extraordinary peer pressure now, especially on boys. Girls, certainly, absolutely, but especially on boys, because this odd tribal conformity of what it means to be a man. I was fortunate in the generation that I was in Liverpool. I was in an artistic generation, and we turned our backs, certainly, on sectarianism, and we became freer. And I was talking to, in fact, I was working with a friend of mine recently, a playwright called Willie Russell, who wrote Educating Rita, Shirley Valentine, Blood Brothers. And we were co-tutors on a course for fledgling songwriters and librettists in Wales. And we were looking back at our growing up days. And in a strange sort of way, we congratulated ourselves. We didn't mean to do it. That we didn't go the way that many of our contemporaries went because we chose to try and think wide. And this happened through the arts. So this is a poem about basically a wee boy growing up now. The poem is called I've Got to Look Right. It's not a conservative statement. It's about I've got to be acceptable to my peer group. One, two, three, four.
I've got to look right. I've got to look right. I'm 10 years old and I've got to look right. Right, trainers walk tall. In spite of me height, I'll be left on me own if I don't look right. I've got to act right. I've got to act right. Move smooth and swagger. I've got to act right. Gangster rap behaviour, though I'm from the Isle of Wight. They'll diss me and dismiss me if I don't act right. I've got to seem right. I've got to seem right. Right, mobile phone and ringtone. I've got to seem right. But I told no one that I bookmarked a pottery website. Best not reveal your hobbies when you've got to seem right. I've got to sound right. I've got to sound right. What's up? I'm chilling. I've got to sound right, but I sound like Joe Pasquale instead of Barry White. It's a challenge for a hoodie if you don't sound right. But I want to look wrong. I want to look wrong. Ditch me urban uniform. I want to look wrong. Go to school tomorrow in a beri and sarong. A key stage fashion talking point. I want to look wrong. I want to be me. I want to be me like a bee trapped in a jam jar. I want to buzz free in the evening, have me breakfast in the morning, eat me tea. But me mates would bait and slate me if I turned up as me. So I've got to look right. I've got to look right. I'm 10 years old and I've got to look right. Right, trainers walk tall. In spite of me height, I'll be left on me own. I'll be left on me own. I'll be left on me own if I don't look. Thank you. My father was a policeman, and he died when I was actually quite young, when I was around about 14, 15. So I never got to know him as a man at all. And he's 51 when he died. He had a really rough war. But I remember growing up, there was one word that stuck in my infant memory, and that was to do with him meeting up with his mates for the regimental dinner. He was in the commandos, and he was in one of the first contingents of British troops that approached Belsen, and they saw the full horrors of that. So there was this word that this phrase I learned at a very young age, regimental dinner. And I was in a school, I now can't remember where it was, but this wee boy came up to me afterwards and he wanted to tell me about his grandfather who'd been in the British Army. And I said, oh, that's fascinating. Where had he served? And he told me, he was actually quite clued up about his grandfather. And then he said this key phrase, this whole thing, which is, regimental dinner, which caused the poem. Something in me went kadoosh. So I channeled the wee boy, made it his story, but also there's an element of my story in it as well. The poem's called In the Genes, and the wee boy says, I am apparently like my granddad. That's what my mother tells me. But I haven't got a coat that's too big for me, or embarrassing trousers, or old skin, or gravy blob spots on the back of my hands. I don't fall asleep on buses or take the dog for a walk and come back smelling of beer. I don't swear at traffic wardens or remember stuff that's not in any order or trump on the sofa and then say, that wasn't me, that was Queen Victoria. Every time. I am apparently like my granddad. My mother says I've got his eyes. But I don't squint at the traffic lights and argue that I only need glasses for reading.
I don't have a rabble of ginger grey hairs in my ears or make a kerfuffle about self-service scanners at the supermarkets and moan about all that bleeping driving you mad. I don't go to something called regimental dinners. Then come home afterwards and sit being boisterous and still at the same time. I am apparently like my granddad. And because of him, I know what rabble and kerfuffle means, and boisterous. But I don't know what happens at regimental dinners. Is everybody still? I am apparently like my granddad, but I've never been in a war, or say little poems quietly to myself, sometimes crying as I say them. Belfast, Derry, and Coleraine, those were the days we can't explain. Enniskillen, Crossmaglen, those were the days of former men. I am, apparently, like my granddad, both brave and scared at the same time. So my mother says.
Yep.
Let's go with this one.
Yeah, I'll just read it. It's called Song of the Worm. It's about a singing worm, strangely. Where I used to stay was dark and treacle. It was deep and fairly safe, but not that much happened there, apart from the occasional shovel. That was always upsetting and divisive. Back then, I was very good at slithering past stones, between the roots of trees, along telephone cables. I was also very good at listening. Now, you may think that it's strange. As it is written, worms do not have ears, but we do hear. And what I listened to was the rain and bombs, the troubled dawn, and the song of the blackbird. Those notes that melt the morning. That is why I came to the surface. And naturally, although the blackbird swallowed me, that was not cruel. What he did was he took me into himself. And now I am in this shining world. It is no longer dark or random. The shovel cannot sever me, nor the landline splay me. And now each morning, before the brilliant tones, the blackbird asks me, "Worm, what song would you like to hear today? For it will be yours." Thank you very much. And just two more poems. The great American songwriter Sammy Kahn was once asked in an interview, "What comes first? Is it the melody or the lyric?" And Sammy Kahn said, "The phone call." And I so relate to that. I was up in Salford doing my usual gig on Pick of the Week. And I'd finished my duties and we were waiting to go into the studio. We were waiting for you and yours to finish so we could go in and record Pick of the Week. So I went down to see pals in the Faith and Ethics department, various producers I work with over the years. And I saw one producer, Janet McClarty, and she said, "I've got this program coming off, and I need a poem." I said, "Great." And I said, any clues? She said, no, not really. Off you go. And it's got to be no longer than 90 seconds. So I thought, great, peachy. So-ish. So I then got on the train at Manchester Piccadilly. And as I was going back to London, the poem began to form. I was watching people, and those of us of a certain age and a certain generation are bemused by this constant. It is constant. Is this an addiction? What is it? Is this a twitch? Now, not wishing to disrespect the younger generation, because that is what they've been given, that's what they've inherited. However, there is a perspective, and I finally got to Waterloo, and then I got the train back to Hampton Court, and the sky was absolutely sensational, whilst everybody was eyes down. We are the eyes down generation, tapping on apps and icons, scrolling for signs and wonders, cradling our tablets of capricious stone, our soothing and desolate slabs, with their images of singing kittens and shrouds on beaches, an indiscriminate kinetic canvas, a potpourri gallery of the deplorable and the frivolous. We are the eyes down generation. And bingo, if we follow this link, we will have won something. Really? How generous? How crooked? Beware, pickpockets operate in this touch screen area. We are the eyes down generation. But if viewed from above, how do we appear? A cloistered congregation on buses, hunched over mystics on trains, wired up for solitary sing-songs and numbing news. We are the eyes down generation, pining, pining, pining for glory and mourning our lucid innocence. Meanwhile, we do not hear the untethered clouds as they chorus to us, pleading, look up and consider. All this has been entrusted to you so that you do not look down. Thank you so much for listening, and this is a wee poem to finish with. It's a benediction called Raison d'Etre. The hairs on our heads have been numbered. Our fingerprints prove we're unique. And though science and surgeons could scoop out our hearts, that still doesn't remove the mystique of being made something from nothing. And given the jewel of free will to love or abstain, to sin or refrain, to cartwheel through life or sit still. Thank you.